Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Island College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent in. If you haven't yet subscribed to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel, also do that while you're here. Okay, let's get into it. The 2023 NBA draft is now just 8 days away. In anticipation of this, we've done episodes that have touched on many of the top prospects: Victor Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson, and Brandon Miller, Thompson twins, Jairus Walker, Anthony Black, Jalen Hood-Schifino, Cason Wallace. We touched on all of them. Today, we want to focus on two players who are arguably the most surprising prospects, who are both expected by most to go in the first round, perhaps even in the top 20 of the draft, and that is Taylor Hendricks from UCF and Bryce Sensabaugh from Ohio State. And the reason those two are arguably the most surprising prospects expected to go in the first round is because both are one-and-done players who were ranked outside of the top 80 of their high school class. Taylor Hendricks was number 84 in the class of 2022, according to the top 247. Bryce Sensabaugh was number 86 in the class of 2002, according to the top 247. How did they go from that in 2022 to likely first-round picks in 2023? I'll ask Norlander next, but first, a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Deadleg, how did Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh go from sub-80 prospects to one-and-done possible first-round picks? Make sense of it.
Different paths, but same origin. What do these players have in common? Trivia time. What do these two players have in common?
They're both taller than me.
That is correct. that applies to... We had to actually do out the planet. What percentage of the planet is taller than Gary Parrish? I'm going to say 77%.
Yeah. It's just basically everybody except Danny DeVito.
Okay. Well, it's not just.
I would post Danny DeVito up. No problem.
You would. You
all
would.
Day.
He's got no chance in the paint against you. There's no question. They played for the same grassroots team. They were teammates, each one teach one, and they have gone to be one and done players, as GP mentioned there. Because
do you remember seeing them at all on the grassroots?
No, because this would have been COVID, so I did not. I did not see this.
I don't remember seeing either one of them.
Yeah, this was 21, and actually, so there is a chance that I would have seen them because I did go to Peach Jam, but I don't remember. I don't remember seeing them.
Yeah, that was the Peach Jam we went to where you had to wear masks in the gym, right? Yeah,
and we're like, you know, 10 teams caught COVID, and
like we talked about Jalen Huccifino on a last draft episode. He tested positive for COVID at that Peach Jam.
And had
to leave Team Dad. So we were there. I guess this is probably true. We saw them. Bryce Sensabaugh and Taylor Hendricks, just probably don't remember seeing them.
Dylan Mitchell was also on that team. And so, in fact, Sensabaugh was the more renowned player at that level for sure. But these guys being one and doneers is what makes them interesting stories, because there are other guys, and we'll talk about these other guys when we're going to do a mock episode, a mock draft pod before we have the draft here. But Kobe Bufkin was 96. Chris Murray was 89. Marcus Sasser and Ricky Council, 88, coming out of their respective classes. Omax Prosser was 94. Jaime Jaquez was 92. And Colby Jones was 91. All of those players will get drafted. Most of them will get drafted second round or late first round. But these two players, GP said, likely to be picked first round. Taylor Hendricks is almost certainly going to go in the lottery. Sensabaugh has a very healthy chance of being a top 20 pick after just one and done seasons. Who do you like more, out of curiosity? Do you like Sensabaugh or Hendricks more?
I think Hendricks, and most people seem to think Hendricks is the better prospect at this point. You know, he's a 6'8", 6'9", bouncy, athletic forward who was terrific at UCF in his one season. 15.1 points, 7 rebounds, 1.7 blocks, 1.4 assists. Block percentage was like 6.2, which ranked top 95 in the country. And he largely, you know, blocked shots without getting into foul trouble too often. Shot, and this is the key, 39.4% from three on 4.6 attempts per game. Also shot 78.2% from the free throw line. So, I mean, he's a 6'8", 6'9", combo forward who might be able to play three positions at times in the NBA. He could play on the wing, play a stretch four, or maybe like a small ball five, and he can reliably knock down shots from three. I mean, he's a 6'8 athlete who can reliably knock down shots from three. Like those guys get drafted pretty high. I've seen him as high as six in some mock drafts. I have him just outside the top 10, but I acknowledge I might be low on that.
I don't think you are low. I'm going to have my annual big board mock draft next week, in where I try and forecast who the top 30 players will be from a given draft when we look up in 5-10 years from now. I won't have Hendricks in the top 10. I don't think he will play much small ball five in the NBA. I think his questions with rebounding are a major reason why. His story is very interesting. I did the feature on Anthony Black. I almost did one on Taylor as well, but it was kind of similar. Not exactly. They are definitely not A to A, apple to apples. But I kind of did that story last year on Jalen Williams, who went from, and he wasn't a one-time player, but he went from obscurity out of Santa Clara to lottery pick to, oh, by the way, he was a top five rookie this past season. So it was a little bit of the same genre, but I am intrigued by it. He was a package deal essentially with his brother, Tyler.
Right.
I don't know if you remember this or not, but I want to say that Memphis was actually pretty involved in his recruitment.
He had an offer from Memphis.
Yeah.
I don't think had Memphis an offer from
both, though. Don't think they wanted to take the pass.
Yeah, that's the thing. So it's interesting you say you almost did a profile on Taylor Hendricks, because like I went looking for them. There's not a I'll say this respectfully. If there is one, I just couldn't find it. There's not like great. Here's Taylor Hendricks. There's no equivalent to your Anthony Black story.
Right.
Taylor Hendricks that I could find. But the backstory is that he was obviously the better prospect than his twin. UCF offered both of them. And he, you know, he's from Fort Lauderdale. So stay in the state of Florida and play with your twin brother. But he did have offers from Memphis, LSU, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, Florida State. Also had like a couple of Ivy League offers. Penn and Yale, I think, were in there. So that suggests on some level he's a pretty sharp young man as well.
I think so. He's also, I think, in this position because of a confluence of events. So one of them, I think a major one being that UCF was a bit plagued by injuries last season. Like UCF was a slightly above average college basketball team that we might have mentioned twice last season, even like, you know, barely, right? They went 19-15, won a game in the NIT. Hendricks was a good player. And because of his performances early in the season, which was enabled in part by former five-star recruit who's now who's a senior this past season, C.J. Walker. He was hurt most of the season. And then there were other guys in the front court that occasionally missed time. And it allowed Hendricks to really, I think, take on a bigger role than he was maybe even anticipating. There was no anticipation that he was going to be an NBA pick after one season, not even after two seasons. But he's ahead of the pace. Because of that, his story is a bit intriguing, and I'm curious as to what he's going to be at the next level, because he is ahead of the pace. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. He's got a 7'1 wingspan. I find him to be a pretty durable power forward type, and while he will be asked to guard multiple positions, if he makes it, he's going to have to play multiple positions. I almost wonder if he winds up being primarily a four, and where that lands him, because he is a good athlete who I think is in this position of like 7-12 draft range, because GP, he is a plus defender and will be expected to be a plus defender in short order at the NBA level. He, I think, understands the concepts well, has the body type and durability to give himself a good chance at sticking, but he will be asked and tasked with being a really, really good utility defender. And so much of his value to me, now he's a good shooter, don't get me wrong, but I think so much of his value is going to stem from what he does on the defensive end. And I think that is what has led NBA teams to hold him in such high regard, because I think a lot of teams that are interested in him in that lottery range think he can fill a role, not as a do-it-all defender, but a do-it-most defender, I think is fair to say, and he can adapt in a variety of schemes. So he's a good shooter, not a chucker. His O rating was 119.9. Like, it's definitely there. I would say maybe he even is a too comfortable, just slightly settling, trying to get shots from the outside, because he's not as reliable on the interior. But that's almost to be expected. He's, again, Parrish, he's interesting because he's ahead of the pace. And right. So with some of his flaws and drawbacks, it's like, well, yeah, that's not surprising. He had an opportunity. He absolutely seized it. And I'm not quite sure what to expect of him at the next level. Could he be a top 10 player of this draft? Obviously, that's possible. Could we look up in 5 years and see that he was drafted 20 spots too early? I actually think that is something that is on the board here with Taylor Hendricks.
Yeah. You know, the reason we packaged Sensabaugh and Hendricks together is because, again, they're both sub 80 prospects in their high school class, according to the top 247, who are now one and done possible first round draft picks. And I only say possible just because there's no doubt Taylor Hendricks is going in the first round. He's probably going in the lottery. I think Sensabaugh's a first rounder as well, but Jonathan Givony just updated his mock draft at ESPN this morning, and he has now Sensabaugh in the second round of his mock. There's some a couple of knee injuries in high school that could be problematic. Like, if you're evaluating all aspects of a prospect, yes. he has a history of knee
I think
issues.
That's why he was rated so GP. I think if he doesn't have the knee injury, I think he would have been a clear cut top 50 prospect. I actually think that's why he's even a subject on this pod right now.
I was talking with Chris Vernon about this, who of course works with me here in Memphis, but also hosts the Ringer, an NBA Ringer, a podcast for the Ringer. And he made note, and I guess I knew this, but I'd never really looked at it. Typically, if you look at the high school rankings from 1 year out, it looks a lot like the mock drafts, like the number one, number two, like Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, they were all up there, mm-hmm. right? If you look at this one, Nick Smith was ranked number one in the class of 2022. He's now a possible lottery pick, but probably not a top 10 guy. Derek Lively was number two. Possible lottery pick, but probably not a top 10 guy. Dariq Whitehead was number three.
Yeah,
maybe a first-round pick, but could slip into the second round. Kyle Filipowski was number four. He's back in school. Kaysen Wallace was number five. Probably not a top 10 pick, but maybe. Gigi Jackson was number six. Definitely not a top 10 pick. Maybe not even a first-round pick. Kelly Ware was number seven.
Transferred now at Indiana for Morgan.
Dylan Mitchell was number eight. Couldn't play.
Yeah.
Keontae George was number nine. That lines up about where he's, you know, in that range. Amari Bailey was number 10. Might not go in the first round. Probable second round pick. The point is, like,
that's
not usually the way this looks. Now, in fairness,
what's the reason? What's now? Hold on.
Okay. I'll tell you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Scoot Henderson should have been a part of this class.
Well sure.
He would have probably been number one in the class, right? Thompson twins could have been in this class. Mm-hmm. So in a different world, and you're COVID. You're looking at the class of 2022, and it's like Scoot is one, Thompson twins are two and three. It starts to look a little better. You also had reclassifications that impact this. You know, Jalen Duren was supposed to be a part of that class, if I got it right. Yeah. And Amani Bates was supposed to be a part of this class, although who knows how that would have ended up. So I think that's a possible explanation for why it looks a little unusual, but it does look a little unusual. This is not usually the way it is. Just to hammer home the point, you go to the class of 2021, number one was Chet Holmgren. Number two was Paolo Banchero. Number three was Shaedon Sharpe. Number four was Jaden Hardy. Number five was Jalen Duren. Jabari Smith was in the top 10. Peyton Watson was in the top 10. So that lines up a little more the way it normally does. This class of 2022 is a little bit all over the place.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Yeah, no, that is aberrational and very interesting. Also, by the way, shouts to Chris Vernon. Heavily endorsed my Anthony Black profile. It's good to know that someone in the Memphis media is reading my stuff and endorsing that stuff.
I was in studio with him last Friday. He couldn't stop talking about it.
Really?
Oh, he's a big fan. I think it's his favorite thing he's read about any NBA draft prospect. I mean that sincerely.
Yeah, no, he was very kind to endorse that, and I appreciate that from Chris Vernon. All right, real quick, back onto Hendricks here. Some of the cons against him, if you will, and then we'll get into Sensabaugh because he is pretty fascinating as well. And I could see Sensabaugh being the better player ultimately at the NBA level. That wouldn't surprise me. Hendricks and watching, and I had to catch up on video with some of this stuff because I watched UCF play. I was looking at the schedule last night. It was a handful at best. They just were not a relevant team. And so I caught up with a little bit of video. Rebounding wise, he's not as good as he should be. But again, like, he's probably where he would be expected to be after 1 year as a freshman in college basketball. But you turn this on its head, he's suddenly an NBA prospect and a lottery prospect. There are going to be some major drawbacks with all of that. And I think rebounding is a growth area. And I think if teams are going to be taking whatever team takes him in that, again, I'm putting him 7 to 12 range. I find it unlikely he goes before seven. It's unthinkable. Maybe he drops a bit out there, but lottery pick, right? I think that they will draft him expecting him to grow as a rebounder and as someone who can be a little bit more reliable near and around the rim on both ends. So that's something to keep an eye on. And then while he's a good shooter, He's not like this. He doesn't have an all around offensive game. He's not a big playmaking guy or creating guy, which isn't, you know, he's a power wing, but there are just, I think some of the drawbacks are a bit glaring. Be interested to see how quickly he adapts on that end. You like him more than Sensabaugh. I think I like Sensabaugh slightly a little bit more. Sensabaugh averaged 16.3 points, 5.4 rebounds, shot 48% from the field, 40.5% from three, 83% from the line, and was on the all Big Ten freshman team, as GP mentioned before, with the knee issues. I think that was a factor in him being ranked where he was. He was by no means like a clear-cut five-star prospect. But yet again, we have a one-and-done player out of Ohio State. That's become thing that's been something of a trope here for many years. But Holtman has been able to do it, although you haven't had the on-court success to match some of that. But yeah, Ohio State's coming off its worst season in 25 years. But it really wasn't because of Sensabaugh. I mean, he was a bit of a ball hawk. I mean, he took 509 shots in 33 games. There were very few freshmen that were more high volume than him. But I think it was validated. Like, he's got a confident shooting stroke. He usually would take the right shot, can shoot from mid range, shoots from deep, doesn't need the dribble to do it. Seems largely unbothered by taking a shot with the hand in his face. I wonder if that actually changes at the next level, though. But he's 6'6", around 235 pounds. And I think he is one of the best combinations of having good strength. Like, he's got some brawn to his game. He's got a little bit of velvety touch sometimes in his game. And he is, I think, can be one of the better defensive. I mean, I guess he already is, but he is among the better defensive rebounding guard / wings in this year's draft. Like, I think Sensabaugh has a better knack for rebounding right now than even Hendricks. But there are some weaknesses, which we can get to in a second. But what's your overall read on Sensabaugh? And I'm guessing you would put a first round grade on him, even if there's some slight doubt over whether he will be there by pick 30.
I think he's one of the 30 best players in this draft. It was noticeable that Gavoni dropped him into the 30s. And I, like, listen, Jonathan's great. He's, he's talking to franchises every day. If he did that, he did that for a reason. And it's probably because he's hearing something that is causing problems with front office's confidence in Sensabaugh as a first round pick. But, you know, take that, set it aside. I like him. He's 6'6", got the 7'2" wingspan. And the numbers were 16.3 points, 5.4 rebounds, 1.2 assists per game. Shot above 40% from three on more than four attempts per game. Also 83% free throw shooter. So that lines up. The shooting is going to be there. It was big numbers and like rock solid numbers, but for a not great team, as mm-hmm. you noted. And those meniscus injuries in high school, like, those can take a toll. And I wonder if franchises are not liking what they see, or hear from that perspective. If that could be an explanation for why he, at least in one mock draft, one prominent mock draft, has slipped pretty considerably. At one point, most people seem to have him projected as a likely lottery pick. And now at least one prominent NBA draft analyst thinks he's not going in the top 30. That's interesting.
Yeah, it could be the medical, but there could be one or two teams lying in wait that are hoping that's the case, and they think they get him well ahead of that. It wouldn't surprise me.
It is also worth noting, it was reported, I think, by Jonathan yesterday that 19 players have been invited to the green room. Bryce Sensabaugh is not one of them.
Yeah, let's hopefully max out on that. Because the more you go into that, you know, no one wants to be invited to the green room, and then you're still sitting there at 25, let alone going to the second round. So that's fair. And the NBA is doing The NBA is trying its best to go off of obviously mock drafts, but also check in with front offices. And while no one wants to give their secrets, just get an indication of like, all right, what's the safe? What's the biggest number that's also the safest number here? And so there is something to that. Although every so often you do get a player that's not invited to the green room that gets taken, you know, four or five with four or five guys sitting there. That's possible. Maybe Sensabaugh will be in that group. But if you want to knock him, yeah, I think sometimes he squeezes the orange to lift a phrase from our colleague Clark Kellogg. I think he needs to, and I think he will have no choice. Like he did what he did out of necessity at Ohio State. They needed him as much as he was, as high volume of a player as he was. They needed that. And even still, it didn't change much about Ohio State's season last year, but he'll need to ditch those tendencies. He can't be so ball dominant. And he's also not where he needs to be remotely as a one-on-one defender, someone guarding the ball, particularly like with his size. And this is something I got from a couple of NBA people when talking about him. He is not as far along as he should be on that end. We'll need to be a deep study on team defensive concepts, elaborate switching. He has serious defensive limitations right now. So it will very much be a situational situation when he gets drafted and where he goes, because there will be some teams that look at him and say, what he does, we already have that in guy A, player B, and guy C, and other teams might have a spot there as a backup or a third option. But you can clearly see that he is too big and theoretically too physical to be as much of a project on defense as he is right now. But as a reminder, like Hendricks, these were not top 30, top 50, top 70 prospects coming out of high school. They're going to have certain flaws. It's why they are not, clear cut top five picks. They're just going to be improvement areas. Those are the ones with Sensabaugh. And, you know, if you can step in and actually play some competent team defense, it's going to help your draft stock. That is the case with Hendricks. It is not the case with Sensabaugh.
Yeah, the defensive stuff is another obvious area of improvement. Like if you're looking for the negatives, it's the history of knee injuries and what he was defensively at Ohio State. If he is not, and it's always, you know, when you start talking, evaluating prospects, with just about any one and done guy, you can talk about needs to get better defensively. They all need to get better. Not all, but like most need to get better defensively. That's a pretty common thing, but clearly like he's got to be better or else it becomes, he'll get attacked in the NBA. I mean, they'll just hunt you over and over again at that level. And if you can't guard your position, they're going to, they'll take advantage of you. So that's, I'm not saying he can't improve, but he does need to improve. Though he was a sub-80 prospect in the class of 2022, I will say I was talking to an agent in like late November, early December. Like pretty, he jumped on radars pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Like an agent was like, it's a typical conversation. You know, hey, who have you seen? Who do you like? That kind of stuff. And the agent said to me, I did not bring him up. The agent said, the guy who's like, I'm really impressed with is Bryce Sensabaugh at Ohio State. He said, he was targeting him. He did not get him, but he said, I've told my guys, go out and let's go try to get Bryce Sensabaugh. He said, if he stays in school 2 years, he'll be a lottery pick. He obviously decided not to stay in school for 2 years, but he'll still get picked somewhere. He'll be on a guaranteed contract, you know, next year. No question about that.
I remember being at the UConn Xavier game and talking to two different NBA scouts who were there and talking about the guys on the floor. And for whatever reason, one of them brought up Sensabaugh as well. I can't remember why. But at that point, one of the scouts was like, yeah, there's no chance he's staying. I think at that point, I remember him saying he should be a borderline lottery pick, which at that point it felt like it. But now it feels like it's a little bit further down the road. It'll be interesting to see when we look up in a few years where these two players compare against each other and the other guys as well. Like, and we're not going to do a deep dive on him here, but you know, Bufkin, he was a major riser as a second year player this year. Again, was 96 in his class. You see what Keegan Murray has been able to do at the NBA level. Chris Murray obviously has good draft projectables. Will he follow a similar path to his brother in terms of stepping into the league and being an immediate player? We'll see. We love Sasser at the college level. He was 88th in his class. We talked about Anthony Black in a recent episode. There are four Arkansas players in this crop. Ricky Council committed to Wichita State. He was 88th. Omax Prosper was one of the biggest winners of the combine there. There will be, and I mentioned Jaime Jaquez, Colby Jones out of Xavier. There will be at least, I think, two of those players that hop one of these two guys. But right now, Hendricks is in a good spot. Wouldn't surprise me if the place he goes to ultimately is the subject of a trade, be it before the draft or on draft night. Wouldn't be surprised by that whatsoever. Also, in talking to some NBA people in the past couple of days, a lot of buzz and curiosity over how much movement there will actually be within the top 10. One front office person I spoke to felt pretty confident that there's going to be at least two trades within the top 10, which to me is a bit surprising, only because I mentioned this on a previous episode. The Scoop versus Brandon Miller thing is intriguing. Wemby just going one, like this is going to be the Wembanyama draft. That's what we're going to remember this for. But beyond that, while there will be good players taken in the top 10, I don't find a ton of enticement here. And the idea that there would be teams maneuvering to get into this top 10, I find to be intriguing because I just don't think this year's top 10, and I would include Hendricks in that crop there if indeed he goes there, GP, is as loaded or as promising as some other recent drafts there. But just, you know, a little additional scuttle here as we are 8 days out from the NBA draft with a number of intriguing prospects. But I don't know. The more I look, like, if, I think, how about this? I think Hendricks will be a good fit, good role player. I think Sensabaugh has the better chance to ultimately be like a top three scoring option and therefore has a little more value down the road. So I would narrowly, long-term, I would put more value on Sensabaugh than Hendricks, but I might be in the minority on that.
In my latest mock draft that's posted at CBSSports.com, I have Taylor Hendricks going... Where do I have Taylor Hendricks going? I believe 12th to Oklahoma City. And then I had Sensabaugh going 17th to the Lakers. So I've got them both in the top 20. But the truth is I might end up being a little low on Taylor Hendricks and a little high on Bryce Sensabaugh. But as always, we'll see.
That's right.
We'll see.
Mock draft early next week. Yeah, we're gonna do a mock draft next week.
That's on
the budget. We got to. Yeah. I think I'm gonna rally Kyle Boone. Did we get Boone and Vicini on a mock draft? Can you even handle that?
I don't know about a four person podcast. That's not really my speed. That's not really what I enjoy.
We'll see if we can get the Sam at some point. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about that. I tell you, by the time we get to the NBA draft, I am ready for it to be over.
I know.
I'm so tired of talking about these guys. I hate talking about these guys as well. The most interesting thing about an NBA draft is you spend, if you're me or Sam or, you know, Kyle, you spend months talking about these people. And then a year from now, I won't even know what some of them are doing. Like, you just look up and they're like on bad teams, not playing. Come next Friday morning, most of these guys we've spent the past months talking about, we will never talk about again. Unless they're trivia time.
We're a college basketball podcast, so that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't know if we are. Okay. I don't know if that's true.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. For sure, sometimes. All right. Let's call that a show.
Sounds good.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. Thank you guys for watching, listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Rate it, review it. There's more of us than there are of them. Yep. That needs to be reflected in the comments. So if you're not subscribed, please go do that, and we will talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
CBS Sunday, after the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.